Ah, yes, it's that time of year again. It's the pseudo E3 time. Yes, E3 is no longer with us, but this period of time remains just as exciting as ever, thanks both to publisher and console holder shows, as well as, of course, the Summer Games Fest that's coming up soon. But we're all sitting here remotely talking about it today because last night, or I guess whenever you see this, very recently, Sony held another State of Play. It was on June 2nd, 2026. I watched it live, and now we wanted to talk about it sort of in the aftermath after seeing it. But this time it's just going to be two of us because, well, Alex is out and Rich hasn't watched it. So it's you and I, Oliver.
Yes, John. Should be a lot of fun today. Interesting show. Cool show. Some big announcements in the mix. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. I think I would describe it as a solid showing where there's enough stuff there. I feel like every game that was shown was at least interesting to some degree, right? And there can be complaints leveled at it, but I think it's good overall. And there wasn't any real stinkers in there, no real slow periods either. So I'm happy with that. But we're actually going to start with the end because I think the biggest reveal for them was the introduction of God of War Laufey, I think they say. Which they showed a pretty lengthy chunk of the game, but specifically the game's introduction to sort of showcase, I guess, what they're going for. And I think it's pretty interesting. I had heard about this project for a while, and I'm more convinced now by the themes. We'll have to wait and see how it actually plays out. But based on the 2018 God of War lineage, I think we can definitely draw some conclusions because this introduction sequence, of course, being that it's an introduction, it's very heavy on cinematics and sort of like introducing the player to what the game is about. But I do think the combat looked pretty fun and pretty quick. It's definitely an evolution of the 2018 God of War stuff, but with a new character, obviously Faye, playing in here. And I think, I don't know. I'm really happy with that. But since this is Digital Foundry, let's actually talk a little bit about the visuals, because I think it's fair to say God of War Ragnarok is a nice looking game, but we were mildly underwhelmed by it at the time visually, as it was a rather conservative looking game. It did ship on PlayStation 4, and you could certainly tell it was a direct evolution of what they did in the last one. This time, however, I do think we're seeing a more significant upgrade right out of the gate. I mean, the very first thing that caught my eye, of course, is the hair sim. I think is pretty good. Frey, or not Frey, I'm thinking of the other character there, Faye's hair. It's long and it's extremely detailed, and it actually does react fairly realistically with the rest of her body, essentially, right?
It does. It moves in a very pleasing, rather hair strand like manner, although I'm not exactly sure what the technical details are on that at the moment. It has a bit of an aliasing issue, perhaps, or an artifacting issue. Maybe that's just an artifact, a little bit of this footage. But, you know, this is running on PS5 Pro using PSSR, so you'd assume that would be cleaned up perhaps a little bit more than usual. But it does look quite good. In general, though, in terms of the technology here, I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of continuity here as well.
Sure.
I would have to say. I think we're seeing like a lot of iterative upgrades when it comes to the environment. Like the environment, there's more detail. You have more foliage in the environment that clearly looks, you know, higher quality. Character models are higher quality than their depictions in Ragnarok, for instance. You look at Faye, she's much higher quality here than she was in Ragnarok. There are some moments here and there where you can spot some issues with the lighting, like where maybe Faye is in shadow and her face looks like it's glowing a little bit, that kind of classic video gamey appearance, or maybe her skin has like craters that seem a little bit pronounced relative to how they should be in a with
right, skin right, right.
Is having proper translucency, right? Things like that. I think we are seeing a lot of continuity there, and there are some techniques we can pick out as well if we want. It's using SSR quite clearly to do reflections, at least. Yeah, that's quite evident based on artifact patterns. Definitely using shadow maps and not at a terribly high resolution either.
I do think, though, it is significantly more attractive than Ragnarok in terms of the GI approach here. There's definitely more bounce going on, and there's some really nice tricks they do as well with translucency on her hair specifically. Like that point right before she's captured and about to exit the cave, the way the light plays off the hair strands, I think is really gorgeous. and it has this like really soft glow. And in general, like the glow of the light in the indirectly lit areas, I think looks noticeably more attractive than it did in Ragnarok, which I felt was a little bit flat in that regard, to be honest. I mean, the game is very nice looking, but it was very much a previous generation look to it. And this definitely feels like the lighting is a lot more refined.
I do wonder the extent to which, like, I mean, Ragnarok had its own lighting issues, obviously, but like going from God of War 2018 to Ragnarok was quite a big difference. And I would argue this is like, it feels kind of similar in magnitude, perhaps just a more detailed, better lighting presentation overall. But exactly, you know, what the makeup of that is, I'm not quite sure yet. We'll have to take a look at the final game to actually determine that. In terms of the gameplay and whatnot, it does look a lot like the other God of War titles. Combat differs a bit because of Faye's different abilities, and it seems like she has the ability to jump, which is something that Kratos never had, really, outside context-sensitive moments, right, where he was kind of leaping up to a ledge, maybe, or where he was clearing a gap. Faye has the ability to clear ledges in real time all over the place, it seems like. So that's actually a meaningful evolution, like when you consider how much these games are just walking, talking, moving around, platforming, things like that. Could be an interesting set of changes to the character's basic moveset. But yeah, overall, this looks quite good. I mean, it's PS5 Pro footage. They've clarified that. It is running at 60 FPS. There are some frame rate drops, although it would be very early to start critiquing that aspect of the presentation. But, you know, looks good, runs well. I'm sure it's going to look very good on PS5 consoles, PS5 Pro consoles. And I think importantly, like basically all the other games in this presentation, they're showing a 60 FPS target that's pretty well met.
Yeah.
I think that's very promising. That's exactly what we want to see out of this generation of console software.
Even with the gelatinous cube. Which I think was
the cube. Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the cube, perhaps.
I'm not a fan of the cube. Oh,
not the biggest fan,
Oliver.
Yeah, but it's all right. It's all right.
I would have loved to have heard the casting a request for that one. Like we have this character, and it's a giant like gelatinous cube. It's like the sequel to the cube of meat that was used to show off Unreal Engine
UE 3.5.
3.5, yep, with Gears of War 2. They're like, and here's this cube of meat, and now we've got the more gelatinous cube instead here. So, yeah, so, I mean, again, it's difficult to gauge, but based on what they've done with the last two games, and in fact, the whole series, I would say, I mean, I expect that this will be a good action game. And I, you know, you see critiques that, oh, most of this was just cutscenes and stuff, but again, this is like the introduction. And that's kind of how the last games have been. They do spend a lot of time leaning to that narrative stuff, but I think most people would agree that both 2018 and Ragnarok have plenty of excellent gameplay within.
Yeah, and they're still doing that trick where it's all presented as one uninterrupted camera shot, which is kind of cool. I mean, I imagine it must present a lot of headaches for the developers. It's an interesting little twist here that we don't see in any other game, hardly. I mean, it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, so, it's a fun little thing for sure. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned the jumping, and it did remind me, of course, that the older God of War titles very much had jumping. So in a way, it's like a return to form. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful. It's still early, but it looked better than I expected it to look. And I think it'll be likely a very good game. So that's a good place to start, right?
Absolutely.
Next up on the list, though, let's rewind back to the beginning of the show, which we finally got a lengthy look at Insomniac's Wolverine game. Of course, we've been pretty open about praising Insomniac's work this generation. If you include Spider-Man Remastered, this will be the fifth game that they ship on PS5. So Insomniac is able to work at a level that is comparable to the PS2 era of development almost. Maybe it's not quite that fast, but it's like the fact that they're able to create games like this at this level within a very reasonable amount of time, I think speaks very highly of the studio and its capabilities. And I would say what you see with Wolverine, it's not pushing the boundaries of real-time rendering, but I think it's a very handsome game that leverages what their engine does well. It moves very smoothly. A bright, colorful, clean image. We still have ray traced reflections in there, which is something they've done very well since Miles Morales. And I do appreciate how, I mean, The thing about ray trace reflections, of course, is the rougher the surface, the more difficult it is to denoise it. And I think it's this sort of area that a lot of games get really stuck on, and you end up with a lot of like noise on consoles when they attempt to allow somewhat rougher surfaces. Insomniac mostly focuses on more mirror-like surfaces, which are easier to handle, and as a result, they look very coherent and clean. And I think it's, for this generation of hardware, is probably the right choice. But everything else about it, man, like the new stuff that stood out to me, I would say, the big one is the blood globule system.
Right.
Which this is it's a violent game. Possibly the most violent game Insomniac will have ever made. I mean, I guess the Resistance games definitely weren't non-violent, but that was against like aliens, right? And there was Fuse as well, but that was also not quite the same. This is very, very bloody. And they've developed a system where the blood itself actually seems to sort of have volume to it. So like at one point you see him like slice into an enemy and the blood globules hit the ground and then actually sort of like they run downwards, right?
Right.
It's not just like a decal or a decal, depending on who you talk to. So I think that's a neat idea for a game where you're so viscerally cutting into enemies. I also like how this being more of a linear action game as opposed to an open world game like Spider-Man, based on the little sting at the end, it shows like they're going to be a lot more variety in terms of where you go in this game. I theorize that he goes to what this seems to be like a sulfur mining operation here in this demo. There's just like piles of like yellow sulfur. And I was theorizing that maybe this is an origin story about how his costume became yellow, but you know, because he's trying to find all the sulfur. No, that's probably not going to happen. But I don't know. What did you think, Oliver? Like, I think the Uncharted style chase sequence in the latter half of the demo really picked my interest. It's their attempt at doing what I would say is a Naughty Dog-esque sequence.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool sequence for sure. And it's something that I felt like we did not see as much of in a title like Spider-Man 2, where despite its production bona fides, right? Very good looking title. It had sequences like its mission-based sequences were much less of a set piece variety and more of the like, here's a warehouse with a bunch of enemies, go in and kill them, maybe there's a boss fight at the end kind of variety, which to me it's a little bit less exciting, and it's nice to see them return to that. Perhaps not having to operate in an open world context has freed up some resources to deliver like really exciting set piece moments that might be very challenging from a production perspective, but are always the kind of moments that we look back on and really reminisce about, right? Really cool, like the Uncharted 2 chase sequence, or train sequence, rather. Very cool. I would also say here that with regards to the ray traced reflections, I do agree 100% that there's kind of this weird situation where if you just ray trace like very glossy, almost mirror glossy, mirror-like surfaces, you're kind of getting the best of all possible worlds because you're getting great performance. Mm-hmm. And also that's where the impact of ray traced reflections is most obvious. Like if you have a very diffuse surface, and not a very diffuse surface, like a semi-glossy surface, and you're getting like that scattering and that kind of ugliness, that speckling on that surface, you're taking an image quality hit, and also maybe it isn't actually that noticeable relative to just sticking a cube map on there and calling it a day.
But you do notice the denoising issues, though, and that's the problem.
Exactly.
That's what a lot of people take issue with.
Yeah, so this is perhaps, again, like a lot of these Sony titles, they're making, I think, really good technical calls just in terms of what kind of problems are we going to tackle with what kinds of technology, right? I think they're making really good calls here. But this is PS5 Pro footage, running it basically a flawless 60 FPS as far as I can see, which is awesome. The reflections, ray traced reflections, they're not layering SSR over it or whatever, so you can see like that it's a simplified world and whatnot. But that actually, I think it's probably the right call because it looks pretty good and there's no screen space layering nonsense, any kind of disocclusion issues, nothing like that. That's great. The animation work looks really cool. I agree, the blood globules, I didn't even thought of that word to describe them, but it's really cool. They do have like a 3D volume to them. I mean, I'd be fascinated to see what their kind of solution is there. In terms of the other technical aspects of the title, I would agree with you, there is a kind of conservatism to just in general the lighting technology here. Like, Spider-Man 2 is already a very good-looking title, don't get me wrong. But we're not seeing a huge evolution from Spider-Man 2 in those kind of, in a lot of these kind of key areas, I would say. Like, we're still seeing, you know, I think a fair bit of continuity. It's just that the detail level has been pushed up, and perhaps the amount of care and time that's been lavished on every single asset in the environment, every single cutscene sequence, probably not having to deliver an open world, has freed up some resources in those areas, I'd have to imagine. This does look a fair bit better. And again, freed them to deliver something like Uncharted-style chase sequences, Uncharted-style set-piece moments that they weren't really able to deliver before for whatever reason. So it does look quite good. And I would say this is, yeah, one of the standout titles on PS5. I think this is coming out in September. Well clear of GTA 6's release date, as a lot of people are noting, with a lot of other titles clustered in a similar release window, seemingly about a month and a half or so away from GTA 6. But I think this is going to be a good one for sure. And definitely, like you said, Insomniac's persistence in delivering game after game after game this generation has to be commended, because like a three-year break effectively between major releases is a quite a fast clip by the standards of console development this generation.
And that was after banging out several in a row, right? Like they were just
launched.
There was Ratchet, you know, multiple Spider-Man projects, then this, and then there's more to come. And I think with the visuals, they've just found this really nice balance where it is slightly conservative, but it's still very attractive and beautiful. And I think they found a way to do pretty great visual design whilst keeping things reasonable and being able to actually produce these games in a timely fashion. And of course, their own in-house technology plays a big role in that. They've clearly mastered those tools and are able to utilize them very effectively now. So very, very impressive showing from these guys, just from that perspective, which is great. Mm-hmm. So, all right. That's looking good. Those are both interesting. Those are the big Sony games I've shown, but there was a lot of other stuff in this. So the rumors were all over the place, but there's this Rayman Legends reboot, right? And my first thought when I heard about this was, why would you do that? Because Rayman Legends in its original form still looks really great. And this doesn't change that. But I have to admit, upon seeing this, I did not expect them to fully rebuild this in 3D. And I actually really like what they've done here. It has this very, like, it really looks like a playable CG movie, but with like a very unique style to the characters that I think is pretty attractive. Mm-hmm. And I'm very curious to see how it all comes together in the end. But I think they found like a new look for Rayman for a new generation. And my hope is that this is like just the beginning of that, and that they also are considering to work on an actual like follow-up, you know?
Right.
So, but this alone, I mean, I still love this. It's been, I don't know, 13, 14 years since Rayman Legends first came out. I can't recall exactly, but it's been a while. It was initially announced as a Wii U game. There's probably a whole generation of people that have not played it, and it's really well made. So introducing new players to Rayman via this method is not a bad way to go. And I hope they pull it off. I mean, I don't know. How much familiarity, experience do you have with Rayman, Oliver? I'm curious.
Well, the classic Rayman games, not so much, but Rayman Legends in particular, okay. I was quite fond of. Did not play it in the original Wii U incarnation, but I played it on Switch and PS4. Very fun game, very good game. I would completely agree with you. When I heard about this project, I'm like, why does this game get a remaster? Because it already works great on current generation platforms, albeit I don't think there's a PS5 version, but you know, the PS4 version runs perfectly well, and why'd you mess that up? And it's UbiArt and it looks great, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is being reimagined in full 3D in Snowdrop, apparently. This is running on the Snowdrop engine. And apparently they're using ray tracing as well. They're talking about ray tracing in this title. And it looks beautiful. PBR materials, brilliant lighting, great characters. Feels like they kept the essence of that kind of UbiArt design. And indeed, I think they're talking about actually running this game, like the gameplay code, everything like that. It's still the same game. It's still the same UbiArt game, basically, just running with a greatly upgraded visual presentation. They're also talking about running it on Switch 2 at 60 FPS. With the same ray tracing features as the other consoles, which I can't wait to see that. I imagine just because it's such a tightly controlled camera, they can probably get away with a lot more than other titles that might be using ray tracing on Switch 2 and actually deliver a stable 60 FPS. Obviously, we've seen Snowdrop on Switch 2 with ray tracing and Star Wars Outlaws, but that was a totally different scope to this kind of project, right?
For sure.
I think this is really cool. I think it looks genuinely beautiful. I think it respects the original work. I don't think it's like, you know, I don't think it like replaces it by any means, but it does have a lot of fealty to that original kind of UbiArt animation. I think it was quite a fetching game at the time and still looks fetching today in this guise. I'm looking forward to this big time, and yeah, I hope this is a hit for them because I'd love to see another one of these. I'd love to see
Me
them
too, man.
take on this world again. And yeah, this looks awesome. Also, like 60 FPS, good image quality. I'm sure it'll run great, play great. I mean, this I think this is just a hit out of the park on this one.
I agree. The only thing I would say is that since they are remaking it essentially, I feel like I would have actually preferred to have seen them tackle Rayman 2. You know, Rayman
Oh.
2 is such a classic, and it's been gone from public availability for a very long time now, and I think it would benefit tremendously from this new like visual style. But
Right.
hey, you know what? I'll take this. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Next up on the list is, I guess, one of the games I'm most excited for. This is a sequel to a game that won my Game of the Year in 2019 on Digital Foundry. It is a series that I've loved for decades. I've been playing it since the 90s. It's Ace Combat 8. And finally, we had a nice look at actual gameplay footage and some actual sort of real-time cutscene looking stuff as well. And it's on point. I mean, the thing about Ace Combat is they've always managed to do this perfect combination of it's somewhat simplified arcade style dogfighting, with just a hint of realism mixed with these like sort of dramatic stories, at least since the third game, I guess you could say, the Japanese version specifically, combined with just phenomenal music work, visual design, and just great performance in most cases. It's just this like package to deliver something that I feel it's like an airborne epic of sorts. And this one, I think, is looking absolutely gorgeous. They've got this new sort of like 3D cloud system that they've grafted into Unreal Engine 5. So they used Unreal Engine 4 for Ace Combat 7, so it makes sense. And Namco's been in on Unreal Engine that they would do that here as well. But the new 3D cloud system that they've developed here looks absolutely stunning, I think, because it allows them to almost craft a level in the sky, right? Where there's almost like structures to fly through, but it's clouds. And I think that's gonna add a lot of personality to the areas above the ground, because there's still plenty of footage of them actually flying over cities. And if the other games are any indication, there's gonna be some really crazy stuff in here as well. But man, like everything that I'm seeing, it's exactly what I want from a sequel to this. It's a shame it's been so long, but I'm just happy it's coming. And I really can't wait for that Kobayashi soundtrack, because man, his for the last game, I remember that the main track for Ace Combat 7 is so good. I think it's one of the finest pieces of like epic video game music ever made, but it took enough effort to make that they actually had to delay the game for him to finish the music, and they made the right call by doing that. So like they understand how important that stuff is to the presentation. Like, have you ever played through one of these games, Oliver?
Well, I did play through Ace Combat 7, at least a
Oh,
decent
nice.
chunk of it, on Switch for a DF review, I think in
Right.
2024. It was a little while ago now. Quite a good port. I do wonder if they'd try to pull off the same feat here on Switch 2, maybe this time around. Who
That would
knows?
be nice.
It would be nice. But as always, I'm happy that John's happy. And I think this is a cool looking title. You know, it is using UE5. They have confirmed that. Not that there was any great suspense. The cloud system, I mean, I can't wait to see that in person from what they've shown off here. I mean, it looks amazing in these limited shots. The cutscenes are quite stunning. I hope that maybe there's a bit of a pullback, or maybe just don't include any at all of the kind of still image sequences that we saw in AC7, because the AC7 had a lot of cinematics that were basically like image, then
Yeah.
image, then image, not real time, right?
I think they're pulling back on that. They have these sequences like on the carriers and various others where they actually have the camera move around in first person and like interact with the other characters. It seems a little bit more cinematic this time. And they've kind of come and gone on that a little bit depending on the installment, but but you're right. Ace Combat 7 definitely leaned heavily on that. This one does seem to be moving more towards what you'd like to see. So yeah, I'm very interested to see that. So yeah, I mean, of course I'm going to play it, and I will probably do a video on it because, gosh darn it, I love me some Ace Combat. So I was so happy to see that. Along the same lines, just beneath it and right after it, the biggest surprise of this whole show for me, it was Stuntman Hollywood. So are you familiar with Stuntman, Oliver?
I've not played the classic Stuntman titles, unfortunately. I think there were two. Were there two of them, I believe, back in like the PS2 era?
There was first Stuntman on PS2.
Right.
And it comes from Reflections, right? The developers of Driver. Mm-hmm. And also there was Stuntman Ignition, which also shipped on like PS3 and 360 and all that. Both excellent, I would say. I really enjoyed it. The original did have some issues with loading times, I will say, annoyingly, but like the core mechanics, the driving was incredibly well done. It was absolutely on point and a thrill. The idea is essentially you're trying to complete a stunt by doing things as the director shouts them at you, right? So it requires you to do a lot of fancy driving in real time to pull off these like crazy movie style stunts. And that's why this approach in Stuntman Hollywood is so interesting to me, because the trailer opens by essentially showing sort of like takes on, it starts with a Fast and Furious reference, right? Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to like, it's like, wait a minute, this is Miami Vice. It's the Miami Vice Ferrari. And then you get Knight Rider. They kick in the theme, they're showing Kit, and you're just like, what the heck? And then the DeLorean shows up, and it's like, is this just like, Super Smash Brothers, but like 80s hero cars? Like, what's going on here? Right. And then it's like, oh, it's Stuntman. And this is an idea I never thought of, but like, they're combining actual licensed properties with the Stuntman concept more directly, right? Instead of just referencing the concepts here, they're actually referencing real movies and the cars in them. So presumably you'll be pulling off stunts based on these films, which I think is a super brilliant idea. And at least what we're seeing here, like, it's ultra promising.
Yeah, it does look really cool. Apparently they're like licensed from NBC Universal or something, so they have a bunch of film properties in there. Like you said, like the Fast and Furious movies, which I think will be really, really cool. I'm totally into this. I could definitely see myself enjoying this. The one downside, though, of this presentation is that it does start as a cinematic trailer, and I think they do something cool with it, so I'm not too opposed to that. But it does contrast a little bit with the real-time gameplay, which is always a slight knock on these kinds of efforts. But I think this is a really cool game, and I'm certainly interested in the concept, and they also describe Burnout as an influence here and Split Second as an influence, which are two games and game series I really do enjoy, so I could imagine myself really enjoying this whenever it launches, for sure.
I just gonna say it's a good time, right? We just got Forza Horizon 6, which is good, but Forza Horizon's been around, right? But now we got that announcement, a reveal of Clutch from former Forza Horizon guys. We've got Stuntman Hollywood here. We've got that new Star Wars racer game coming out. It feels like we're getting a fair number of more arcade style racing games. You know, the pseudo realistic arcade style racing games. The only thing really missing for me still is I want my Ridge Racer. I really want it to come back at some point, but it feels like Namco is just not willing to do that for some reason. But I'm holding out hope someday. But either way, I feel like we're in a pretty okay place right now for these kind of racing games, in a place that we've not been for a while. So that's good news. Mm-hmm. Speaking of a place we haven't been for a while, Oliver, did you ever play Until Dawn?
Oh, Until Dawn. Absolutely. I played Until Dawn. Very cool game. The original Until Dawn, though, not the remake. I did play the remake, I think, for coverage, but not for recreation. Very cool game. Starred a lot of popular actors from the time, made by Supermassive Games. Ran on the Decima engine. I think it was the very first title outside of Guerrilla to run in Decima. Yep, obviously, we've since seen Death Stranding 2 running that engine.
Right.
But yeah, extraordinary title. Very cool visual presentation, only hampered by a very uneven frame rate on PS4. Nowadays, if you play the game on PS5, PS5 Pro, that's ironed out pretty much, because it is totally unlocked up to 60, so you get a much better experience. But yeah, really cool game technically, really cool game in terms of what it was doing with interactive storytelling at the time. There wasn't really anything else like it. Nowadays, we've seen quite a few of these games since then, like the Man of Medan, Supermassive Games efforts. They've been pumping out a lot of them recently, I think, in recent years. Directive 8020, I think, just released rather recently, and that's another game of this ilk. Until Dawn 2, though, interesting title. Looks like UE5 to me, very reminiscent of UE5. Not sure that it's pushing up the same technical boundaries, although it does look quite attractive. But yeah, same concept, totally different setting. One returning character in Peter Stormare's character. I can't remember his name in the original game, but he is returning right in some capacity in this game. And I think that's really cool. And again, they're presenting it as the same kind of concept here, where your choices determine the fate of every character, and they say all of them can die or all of them can live based on your decisions and possibly your competency with quick time events and things like that, as was the case in the original game. Who knows exactly how they modified that, if at all here. But cool looking title. Not sure that we have too much to say technically outside of it looks very good and it looks very UE5.
Everybody looks ultra douchey, which is exactly what we want for this type of game, right? Because, like,
yeah,
that's the point. I agree. I like these a lot. I love the original. I played through the remake of Until Dawn with my son because he likes horror stuff. And, like, he had a blast, man. But he got so stressed every time we had to make big decisions. And he was like, oh, I can't decide. It was great. But these are really, this is like, this genre that Supermassive basically helped build with Until Dawn has become kind of a thing. They've been doing dark pictures for a while. And it's like the end game for that sort of FMV style storytelling from the 90s, but like more interactive and interesting, I would say. Mm-hmm. But this is not Supermassive. This is, you know, it's Fire Sprite, which has formed up. They've been around for a while. They did a lot of VR stuff like Horizon Call of the Mountain. They also did the Persistence, which was really good, actually. But they were like formed up from like ex-Psygnosis guys, right? Oh. So they have like a rich history with the PlayStation and all that going back a long ways. And somehow they also seem to have been involved with Cloud Imperium on Star Citizen, which I don't know yet. That's super interesting. But either way, I wish them the best. This looks cool. So yeah, hoping for that. A few more to mention then. Oliver, what did you think of the Tomb Raider sort of quote-unquote reboot? It's like a remake of the remake, if you will.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this looks pretty cool to me. Unfortunately, this is one of those games where I don't really speak the language because I did not play the original Tomb Raider I have played it at some point, but not to any real depth. And obviously, I think the game probably is not aged as well, just in terms of...
You're wrong.
I'm wrong.
It's phenomenal. It's still great today. In fact, Mark Triforce Duddleson, who's on the DF Retro Super Show, he played through Tomb Raider 1 last year for the first time, having never played these games, and absolutely adored it. And it's right. Because it creates this very serious challenge of climbing. Like, just reaching the top of a structure requires serious effort in a way that's really rewarding and fun still today.
Perhaps I'm incorrect there on some level, but it's also a game that's quite archaic in terms of its sensibilities.
Yes,
I'm sure you'd agree.
Extremely.
Yeah. So I imagine this game will be a little bit more handholdy, not to use too much of a pun there, but this looks pretty good. I mean, the extent to which the game is being reimagined is quite extraordinary here relative to that original effort, from everything that I understand. But looks outstanding. Very UE5. Obviously, these Tomb Raider games are running on UE5, as has been documented elsewhere. But looks quite good. It's running on PS5 Pro. There's a mix of frame rates here. So some is at 30 FPS. Some is at 60 FPS. But I wouldn't necessarily take that as some indication of the game's general performance level. Like, I imagine the final game probably will target 60 FPS reasonably well in some form. Character is also a high point here. This does look a little bit UE-ish in the sense that, like, you can kind of see the way that Lumen pools shade in corners, and you can the reflections. You can kind of see all the elements that make up a modern Unreal Engine title. But it looks quite handsome, I'd have to say. It looks quite pretty, and coming out reasonably soon here, in about 6 months or so. So I'm looking forward to this. And there's also the continuation of Laura's saga in the other Tomb Raider title, which I think Crystal Dynamics is pushing a little bit later in 2027.
Yes, I think that's correct. Yeah, I guess what makes this situation interesting is just that we already had a remake, right? There was Tomb Raider Anniversary, like 10 years after the original Tomb Raider or so. And that was already a gigantic difference from the original game. And so this is just taking it in a, you know, further towards modern games, I suppose. And it'll be interesting to compare all three of them, especially because with that Tomb Raider like 1-3 collection that was released a couple years ago or so, like the original Tomb Raider is actually more accessible than Tomb Raider Anniversary.
Right.
So yeah, kind of an odd situation there. But yeah, very curious to see how it turns out. I'm liking how it looks. Another one I wanted to talk about was something called Kemuri, which is a game from Ikumi Nakamura Studio. And she was the lady that appeared at, I guess it was the final big E3. I was in the audience with Audie when this was revealed, but she worked on, I guess, what was it? Ghostwire Tokyo at the time.
Right.
Which has long since come out. But she went on to found her own studio, and they've been working on this, and it seems to be a game about yokai hunting. And I really like the visual style they're going for here. It's got a very, very cool stylized look. I mean, my first concern was like, oh no, there's character classes. Is this just going to be some like MMO mobile-y thing again? But no, like it does have co-op, but it doesn't seem to be quite like that either. So I'm willing to give this a shot because I do think the visual style and the concepts here are at least compelling enough that I want to give it a shot. I don't know. What do you think of this one?
I think it looks awesome. And I really like the way they've kind of integrated the motion blur as a means to keep things readable when you're moving at like superhuman speed, but also integrating the motion blur with particle effects, with speed lines, with things like this, very comic book style effects, to really create a unique action experience, like moment to moment. The action just looks so cool in this title. And then obviously all the stylization on top of that. And yeah, I did get very Ghostwire Tokyo vibes from this with the kind of yokai concept. So not surprising that there was some shared lineage there. But yeah, this is not the kind of game that I would be super interested in. But it is a game that visually looks extraordinary, which I think is something that does draw my eye a little bit and make me want to play it, even though the concept of like a, you know, three-player co-op title is not really my bag. Not so often, but I may be willing to try this one out just because it is so extraordinary from a visual perspective and so immediately eye-catching and unique.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that. And there was actually a bunch of other stuff as well. We don't have the time to talk about everything here, but I do want to mention one more thing because it got a demo. It's Onimusha Way of the Sword. So this actually, they released the demo right after the show. And I've played essentially this demo before. I played it back at Gamescom, and it seems to be basically that same demo. But what I hadn't played before is the game on PC. So I had a chance to actually load this up on my PC and was, you know, suitably happy that it runs insanely well. I shouldn't be surprised. The RE engine is really, really optimized and it runs great. But in this demo, I was able to basically, again, high-end PC, I know, but I threw all the settings up to the max, ray tracing on, DLSS quality mode, no frame generation, and I'm easily at like 130, 140 FPS with this like this super stable frame time graph. It's so optimized and smooth feeling. It doesn't necessarily push any visual boundaries. I don't think it looks as good as Pragmata or anything, but I do think it's still attractive. And I'm really liking the combat system here. I think it feels good. It's challenging. And Musashi, the main character, has some serious attitude that I find humorous. There was one point where he kind of like acts like, oh, where the heck, how am I supposed to get to that point? And then the game's like, open your map. And it's literally just like a straight line. And I'm like, but then once you actually get into that area, you know, there's a bit more to it. I think it's very promising, and it's just a continuation of Capcom essentially ruling the world. Like Capcom is essentially like, in a similar way to Insomniac Games, they've been able to continuously produce a lot of very high quality titles on their own technology at a reasonable clip. They're able to get these things out without like 5 or 6 or 7 years of development time for each mm-hmm. one. And I think that's really awesome and important that they're able to do this. And it shows just how smooth and optimized their like internal development pipelines are. And I'm excited for this as well. And yeah, happy to report that it's running great on the PC. The console versions are also looking good. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice revival of what I think was a really underrated and awesome series.
Yeah, it's really cool here. And I think there's one underappreciated element of Capcom's prodigious work ethic that is worth complimenting here, which is the fact that they're able to produce games at a reasonable clip, seemingly without ridiculously inflated budgets or incredibly inflated headcounts or anything like that, enables them to go back to series that might not be like these top tier premium Monster Hunter, whatever kind of series like Onimusha, go back and actually make a new game in that series where, like, you know, a lot of Western developers, a lot of AAA developers in this field probably could not spare that development expense, right? Because if they were going to produce it, it needs to be a hit. It needs to be a game that justifies $300 million, $400 million in investment. I don't think Onimusha needs to clear $400 million in sales to make a profit, is my suspicion, right? So this is a probably a safer way to at least continue to work on games. I think this looks pretty good as well. I mean, it's not the prettiest game out there. It looks a little gray to my eyes.
It is a bit gray, yeah.
It's a bit gray. It's a bit gray. It's a bit faded. Perhaps that could be adjusted slightly, but perhaps on PC. But I think this is, you know, it's clearly a very competent looking, playing, sounding, I'm sure, game that's being released in the year of our Lord 2026 in September, as so many games are scheduled currently to avoid the GTA 6 menace, which is going to be a bit of a problem for us because I think, John, you're typically away in September, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be in Tokyo during that time. So
right.
And Alex is out for the time being, so I'm so sorry, Oliver.
Like, I have a lot of games to cover.
When I get back, I will do my best to help. But man, it's going to be brutal. But hey, it's brutal in a good way. Lots of awesome games coming out. I actually saw that the developers of, I think, like S whatever, of Phantom Blade Zero, or as they say in Norway, Phantom Blade they delayed the game or changed the release date to later in October, which I feel like might be a reaction to like the deluge of September releasing games. They're like, we better do something about this.
Yeah. A lot of people are avoiding that date for a pretty obvious reason, which is they don't want to be crowded out by the biggest entertainment product to launch in the history of humanity, which makes complete sense, but betrays a certain level of cowardice perhaps as well, that no one is willing to go toe-to-toe. I'm sure some brave indie developers will market their games by launching same date as GTA 6, right, and make a show of it, but for the most part I would expect games to avoid that period if at all possible.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So all in all, I feel like really cool little show here. I'm mm-hmm. happy with what they showed. I mean, it wasn't mind-blowing. We didn't get any giant surprises here. I was really hoping for at least one thing that I didn't see coming, but maybe that's just being slightly jaded. I feel like I still enjoy these. Like, maybe I'm a sucker for it, but like, I like the vibes around this sort of like reveal period. It is ultimately just a series of commercials, right? But it's fun. It's exciting. It's basically a chance to see what all these studios have been up to over the last years. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And I still do. I still get excited for these. It's not as good as the traditional press conferences from the past, but it works.
Yeah, and I think Sony's in an interesting position, too, because they tend to, not always, but they tend to reveal games nowadays when they're fairly close to release, like within a year or so release. I know, I think Jason Schreier was saying that God of War Lawfey is probably coming out sooner rather than later, which suggests a release date perhaps in 2027, I'd have to assume, given that they aren't dating the game yet, which is kind of more what they want to do for games that seemingly are releasing this year, at least judging from their little schedule here. But yeah, Sony does not, like when Microsoft releases games, sometimes they tease them well in advance of release. For the most part, Sony does not do that, with some exceptions like Intergalactic, for instance. And also, Sony tends to spread out their announcements throughout the year, whereas other vendors, you know, Microsoft, they really do like to concentrate them with a really exciting June showcase, perhaps, that includes every single title that they could be releasing in the next couple of years, including some titles like Fable. I think we saw Fable, the earliest we saw Fable was in 2020, I think, with a teaser trailer.
It may have
And then,
even been, I feel like I was at
or
E3
maybe it
when it
was
got
2018 or something. It was a long time ago. And then we saw the kind of re-reveal in 2023, and then we've seen successive press beats since then, right? So that's been a long period just for one title. And that game's now been pushed to 2027, so that's quite a long pre-release window. I think Sony does not like to roll that way so much. But yeah, I think this is a good show. I think they hit all the marks that they were expected to hit: a big new reveal, extended looks at existing titles, some new really high quality efforts from smaller developers. I don't think there were any like misses in this showcase. There were some good showcases too from indies as well, which we didn't touch on, didn't have time to touch on, but some cool stuff there. So yeah, I think this is a solid show, albeit one that didn't like, it didn't like scratch any of my particular interests. Like there was no new, you know, Ace Attorney, for instance, or like, you know, Persona or something that would really please me in particular, like probably Ace Combat did for John here. But
exactly.
I think it was a solid show for sure.
Yeah. I think you might get some of that, Oliver. I wouldn't worry. We still got some shows to look forward to, so get
Yeah,
ready. But that's
for
going to do it
sure.
for this video. So thanks for joining me to discuss this, Oliver.
Likewise, John, a pleasure as always.
And we'll see you again very soon. I guess the next time, maybe on the main DF Direct, we'll be talking about whatever happens at the Summer Games Fest thing. And then, of course, we got the Xbox show, which I think is happening on Sunday. And that actually has a dedicated Gears of War segment. I have been waiting so long to see what this looks like, because the Coalition is like the studio to showcase what Unreal Engine can do. So I am very much hoping and expecting that we'll see something that really showcases the technology at its very best. So look forward to that coming up. And, well, until then, see you next time. Have a great one.